This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast with me, Jane Johnson. I'm recording this on a very, very wet and windy Tuesday afternoon, so please bear with us. We're obviously still in lockdown. If you can hear some drumming or tapping, it's not me typing away on the computer. It's literally the rain on the windows, both of my guest and myself. For the last 6 months, this podcast has hosted some incredible women who are all experts in their field. And it's clear that I'm not an investigative journalist or reporter. I'm sure a few of you have wondered exactly what I am qualified to do. Well, I spent 20 years in corporate communications, and my last in-house role was as a director of comms at HSBC. I took 8 months off on maternity leave during that role, and when I went back, I negotiated the role as a job share. It was the first one at that level for the bank, and I did it for a year, and I'd been at the bank for 5, so I thought it was time to start looking around for my next move. With a 2-year-old who was still a few years off starting school, I wanted still to work, but I needed to work flexibly in some way, shape or form for the foreseeable future. But the trouble was, when I mentioned flexible working to recruiters, they were either clueless or just aghast. And yet I knew that employers like mine were very happy to consider flexible working requests and working really hard to try and retain women. But why did I never see CVs from people who wanted to work flexibly when I was recruiting for my own team? And why was no one willing to represent me all of a sudden once I mentioned flexible work? So I left the bank and I set up a flexible working recruitment business. And I ran that for 6 years, for the last 6 years, in fact. I've seen more CVs than I care to mention, and every one of my clients, who included KPMG, BT, Crossrail, Covent Garden Market, insurers, banks, they all came from my network on LinkedIn and from the way I used LinkedIn to spread our reputation. I learned how the recruitment industry works and what employers want in a CV and how to nail that. I learned how to negotiate flexible working and how to use LinkedIn to your advantage. So this month, the Careering into Motherhood group is running a 5-week online coaching program to teach a small group of women these skills. It's £300 plus VAT, and you'll meet other like-minded women who will be your cheerleaders and support you in your job search even after the program has finished. The program itself is a blend of online learning and weekly group sessions, all from your own home. If you'd like details of the course, please email me, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. We're starting shortly, so please drop me a line sooner rather than later, because places are limited. Over the next 30 minutes, I'm talking to Fiona Fleming, who has unfortunately just been made redundant and is back on the job market. We look at her CV and talk about some of what I've learned over the last 6 years in recruitment.
I found out literally a couple of days ago that I am indeed now definitely going to be made redundant, which has been disappointing, but in other ways has given me time to focus on what I want to do with my career and the direction that I'd like it to go in. So I'm trying to look at the positives of the situation rather than I don't have a job.
Yes. there's that sort of well-known curve, isn't there, that people go through where sort of they first, the some people do sort of feel almost a bit upbeat and elated.
Yes.
Opportunities, and then I think you do hit a bit of a curve, a downwards thing, but then hopefully come back up again pretty
exactly.
Quickly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the role that I'm currently in, was the head of inclusion, equality and culture for a legal publisher. And it's quite a new direction for me. So that's my most recent role, but actually my background has been very much more in content, editorial and publishing. So I sort of am also finding myself in a situation where I'm not only just looking for a new job now, but I'm essentially reinventing my career at the same time during a massive global pandemic. So I've chosen a good time to do that for sure.
Well, I mean, I think, again, looking for the positive, I think now has never been a better time to reinvent yourself, because the world is trying to reinvent itself and understand what the world of work looks like, what employment's going to look like, what offices are going to look like. So Yeah, so you've already sort of done one reinvention with this latest role. Okay, so if we're looking at, let's get back to the first place, you're not looking for yet another career change, or you are looking for a job offer or a return to work. I think when people sit down to write their CVs, the first thing is to be very clear on what you want that CV to do for you.
Yeah. And I think so for me, it's obviously about showing this is the new direction of my career, but that I have a lot of, I believe, to be very good transferable skills. So while I haven't had a significant period of time working in D&I, I need my CV to show that it's something that I've been passionate about for a long time, but that I also have a lot of other skills that would help to make me successful. I think that's the key thing.
Certainly. And, you know, you've been there for 2 years, so that's not just a sort of 6 month flash in the pan thing. And you've got a very real reason for why you're on the job market right now. And increasingly, you know, I personally believe there is never any sort of stigma around having been made redundant. Everybody knows for the last 10, 20 years, companies hire and fire and grow and then release people. So there's no such thing as the job for life, and you were let go for, you know,
exactly,
other reasons.
It's COVID. I think so many people's jobs are being affected by this that it's not, I don't think it's a new situation that people are unemployed.
That's right.
Because of it.
No, not at all. And sadly, I think it's going to be, you know, more and more common. So let's just start at the top. And as I said, I'm conscious that our listeners can't see your CV. You've got it set out on 2 pages. Perfect. Definitely try not to do any more than that. However, I can't not say this, Fiona, but I can't contact you. Your CV, it doesn't give me your name. It doesn't give me any location. It doesn't give me an email address, a phone number. So the way that recruiters work, or even, you know, if you're applying to a company, your CV will go into a kind of, let's just call it a melting pot, where it will be chucked into a database and it will pull all the data just automatically. A person won't be sitting there doing it. So my company's database, you would just be under F and then Fleming. The problem is that that might be fine if you're applying for a single job and, you know, it does land in the recruiter's lap or in the hiring manager's lap. But if you're not successful for that particular role, you will never come up again in a search, because my database, you know, for it will search on location, it will search on, you know, by name, etc. And if you haven't got that information, I think I understand why you haven't put it on. Again, just for our listeners, you've got F.L. Fleming. So I don't know whether you're male, female, or other genders, but recruitment hasn't quite caught up. And the other thing is, as a recruiter, I am receiving tens of CVs every day, and I'm only a small, my company was only small. If I open a CV, if I'm a not especially diligent recruiter, if there's no contact details on there, I'm never going to go back through the email or even the covering letter. If you're not in there, I'll move on to the next person. So sorry if I'm sounding harsh.
No, not at all.
Put those details at the top.
So this is actually something that I was advised to do by someone who works in D&I, because obviously most organizations now are attempting in whatever way they can to do blind recruiting. I was advised to take off any reference that might say what my gender was, particularly where I lived, because certain areas may have negative connotations. So those were all of the things that I was actually explicitly asked to take off, including email address, because obviously my email address is fiona.fleming. So it would give away, you know, my gender in that respect, or at least how I identify my gender. So that's really interesting to hear that actually I should be putting those things back on.
Yeah. And I, you know, it is, these are very, you know, we're finding our way. But as I say, recruitment is still data entry, finding people on databases, and you want to be found and then have the conversation. And again, if you've got an organization that isn't interested in you because of the way you identify in terms of gender, then is it ever going
to
be the kind of
place
organization that A is recruiting your kind of role, or B the kind of place you want to work?
Very true.
It's not about people being able to identify, but it is about people being able to find you, just to be able to call you up and say, you know, even if you were, imagine if you were got an interview and then it goes back through the recruiter that the client needs to change and they can't find your details. It's just purely a logistical thing.
No, that makes sense.
But don't worry, this is not the first CV that I've seen like this. So put some way of contacting you on the CV. And the other thing that people tend to forget, because nobody puts addresses on anymore, obviously, but put an idea of where you'd be willing to work. So whether you want to put, you know, based in London or willing to consider roles in London and the Southeast or whatever it might be, or Hertfordshire and the surrounding, whatever it is. But again, it all helps when you're in that recruiter's or that employer's database. They can look for you and they'll find you and they'll go, oh, okay, we've got a job in Yorkshire. Okay. Fiona's right or not right for that.
Perfect. Okay, great. Okay. No, that's really helpful. No, thank you.
I feel like we spent a lot of time talking about about contact details. So then you've got, as I say, in terms of layout, what you've done is, again, the preference, because if you're going for roles in, you know, in the corporate world, don't go all out wacky and do icons and infographics and things, which I see with far too much frequency. Sure, if you're going for a really creative role in a creative industry, then do something that reflects that. But on the whole, keep it simple, chronologically laid out, starting with a personal profile. And I personally think your personal profile is great. It's good. It's really good. You've got lots of interesting adjectives that describe what you do and how you do it. You might want to consider, rather than saying, you know, I'm honest, forward thinking, etc., if you can, and it's really tough because you've got it exactly the right length. It's a paragraph of about 8 to 10 lines. But if you can give some examples about, I was able to demonstrate my empathy and forward thinking abilities when I did X. So just, again, something, because everyone in their personal profile is going to say, no one's going to say anything nasty about themselves, are they?
Sure, exactly.
So, so what you want to do is try and differentiate yourself from others. So a piece of advice that I've heard before is, imagine a third party, a friend, was writing about you. What would they say? But exactly as you've done, don't write it in the third person, like, you know, Jane was a so-and-so, Jane did this, she did that. Sounds awful. You've written it yourself. So use the first person. Just try and put a bit more kind of material. This is what I did. And that demonstrates, therefore, I am this kind of person.
Ah, okay, great. That's really helpful. I'd never thought to do it that way. So yeah, that's another thing I can take on board. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, it is tough in that really small space. But again, you just want to stand out.
And I think it's always the part that I probably find the toughest, is that kind of almost elevator pitch that you put at the beginning that says how great you are. My natural inclination is not to tell people that I think I'm great at something. It's quite uncomfortable for me to do that. So I always struggle with the profile section.
And I think most people do. Again, I think especially it tends to be a female trait that we don't sort of big ourselves up. But that's why thinking about what a good friend or a close colleague would have said about you in, you know, most recently, and writing it almost as they are saying it, but then put it back into the first person. The other strange thing is it obviously comes at the start of a CV, yet you might want to leave it, in terms of writing, you might want to leave it until you've written the rest of it, because then everything you've done, you've got this great big list in front of you, and you can, it's much easier to kind of summarize.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
But yeah, I think this is great. Thank you.
A couple of tiny tweaks. And I really like as well, it's so helpful for employers, hiring managers, when you've done this key skills and expertise. There's a lot of talk about competency-based CVs, and I think especially people who've had career gaps, so my candidates, working mums who've had a few years out and didn't know how to or didn't want to put that on the CV. So therefore, instead of doing the chronological job list as you've done, they'll use these competency things. And again, it doesn't translate into a recruiter's database, and it's really hard to see what you've done, when you've done it. And also employers like to see progression. So exactly as you've got, that you've got a story to tell about your career and what you've done, that can only really be told if you start at the beginning and, you know, work your way back. So a good way of including those competency things is to have the key skills and expertise section and just do some bullet points as you have done. So the next bit is to come on to the actual way you describe what you've done. But again, Fiona, I mean, I've got an easy job here because you have done a great job. You've got budget in there. You've got the number of people you were managing. You've given me a description of what the role was and what you did. So again, I wouldn't necessarily go through it with a big red pen at all. The broad rule of thumb that I tell people is you're always employed to solve a problem for an employer. So what were the problems that you were employed to solve? How did you solve them? And what were the results? If you can kind of use those three things in most of your description about that job, then somebody looking at it will get a good idea of what you deliver that's different from everybody else.
I've never thought about thinking of it sort of what problem was I hired to solve. I've never actually sort of thought about explaining my job in that way, but much more along the lines of, oh, these were some of the key things I had to do on a daily or monthly basis, and these are then some of the nice things that happened off the back of that, but hadn't actually put it into that particular context. So that's really, really helpful.
Good. Yeah. And as I say, I mean, you won't end up with something dramatically different from what you've got, but you just want to make it easy. So there have been a number of studies about how long do you think a recruiter or hiring manager spends looking at a CV?
Probably about 30 seconds, maybe.
Yeah. So that's the longest.
Wow.
Of all the studies, that's the longest. It's anywhere between 5, 6, 7, and 30 seconds.
Wow.
So that's all you've got to make your impression. So I keep saying, don't be afraid to be different from what you think the other candidates are going to have. And don't just tell a potential employer what you think they want to hear. Show them what you have done. Obviously, don't lie, don't fluff things around, but be really crystal clear in terms of what problems you'll help them solve. And there's nothing wrong for other people listening to this. There's nothing wrong with looking at some of the jobs you'd like to apply for, looking at the job descriptions, and using some of the bullet points or the language that they use, providing you've obviously done that yourself, because the recruitment industry is so fast-paced and recruiters don't get paid unless or until they place somebody. And usually a recruiter will be one of three, possibly even four other agencies working on exactly the same job. So what they want is to get those CVs over the fence in front of the client as soon as possible, which is why they're looking for square pegs to fit into square holes. And this is the problem that we come up against when we're asking for flexible working or anything out of the, in inverted commas, ordinary. It's usually too much of a headache for a recruiter. They'll just move on to the next CV. But we can talk about flexible working requests and things like that later. But what I'm saying is if they're asking for X, show them you've done X.
Okay. And do you think it's sort of, so one of the things that I have been doing, and you may advise against this, is depending on what the job description I've seen has been, I've rearranged some of the bullet points to sort of emphasize. So if a particular job description is really focusing on something a bit more specific, I'll move that to the top of my achievements and responsibilities list. Or would you recommend sort of just keeping everything as it is?
Definitely tailor your CV. And again, there's this one of the things that gets the eye twitch going is when people say, oh yeah, I've done my CV. I don't think you've ever done your CV, because it should be an organically growing document that you change for pretty much every job you apply for. No recruiter or employer wants to receive a broad brush, just the scattergun approach, what do they call it, spray and pray. So you may get lucky with that, but you need to spray very, very widely. But tweak your CV for each job that you're applying for, because you want to give yourself the best chance.
I think that's where I have probably struggled with this particular CV, not just because it's been the first time I've had to write a CV since changing the direction of my career. But because the role before that I'd been headhunted for, then I was headhunted for this particular role. So I have not, I fell into that category. I had not updated my CV for years. And when I came back to it, I was like, oh my gosh, that was like three jobs ago that I did anything. And it just looked horrific. So I sort of felt like I was really starting from scratch and not knowing what to do.
I think that's a very common place to be in. You know, you get a new job and I think people always have this, the first thing they'll do is go and update their LinkedIn profile. But then once you get into the throes of the job, you don't have time to think about keeping your CV updated and so on and so forth. So it's only when you need it that you come back to sort of thinking what you're going to put down.
Yeah, when you're in the flush of a new role and it's exciting, you're like, I'm never going to need to do another CV. This is my dream job.
Exactly.
And then you're made redundant. You're like, oh gosh, I've got to do something now. So
yes, yeah, exactly. But I mean, the other thing is do send it out to people. Very few people actually bother to get their CV checked or peer reviewed. And recruiters will hardly ever give you feedback on a CV. It's a huge shame, and it's something I felt really passionately about. And I'm not saying I was amazing, but I did do that quite a lot. But they just don't have the time. So ask people, and definitely if you're applying directly to an employer, especially if you've been in for interview, ask for feedback. But yes, you know, keep your eye peeled, use LinkedIn, look at the job descriptions on there, and you know, you might read 10 and get 10 bullet points out of, you know, these 10 job descriptions where you think, actually, yeah, I did that, so I'm going to pop that on the CV. You know, the other great thing you've got, Fiona, is you've very clearly, because you wanted to go into a slightly different direction, you've done some qualifications around that area, which all makes a really good story about how committed you are to this new direction. And I would possibly mention that in your profile.
Yeah, because that information comes really quite far down the CV, almost at the very tail end of it. So you kind of don't get to that point until you've actually had to go through my career history first.
Exactly. What you want is your first page has already convinced whoever is reviewing it that, yes, they want to give you a call, or they want to bring you in for an interview, or they want to know more about you. The second page is just a validation. And then you come into the sort of the additional information. There's one key rule of thumb for that, and you've got it. Because of the space that you're wanting to move into, the industry and the sector you're wanting to move into, you've got some very relevant outside interests. So definitely leave those on. You know, you've only got one sentence, but you know, people aren't interested whether you're interested in running and this, that, and the other. It's ironic because I always think those things used to be very kind of male. It's like, you know, I enjoy golf, and so yeah. It was something at the end of the interview. Do you know Joe Bloggs down at Surrey Golf Club? Yes, you know, yeah. And it was a way of finding common ground, which you know, we're not supposed to be doing these days with impartial interviews and that kind of thing. Of course, I'm sure people like to know that they're employing great people with lots of interests who can bring different things to the role, but that should have really come in your CV. And I always a little smirk when people put, you haven't got it on here, but when people put clean driving license, and that, well, that's fine if you're applying to be a Sainsbury's delivery driver, but if it's not relevant, don't put it on the CV.
Don't put it on.
Because it's just using valuable space. Sure. That's the thing. When it's really hard, you know, as you get further on in your career, it's really hard to fit everything into two pages. So, you know, if you can save lines by not including that kind of stuff. And again, you don't have it on, but don't put things like references available on request, because of course they are. Every job needs a reference these days.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I put on my CV, obviously, I can't list every single role that I've done because I'm in my 40s now, so I've had a few jobs in my time. So do you suggest having that line that I put in it, that additional roles, you know, are available? Is that worth putting that in, or should I just assume that people, of course, would realise my career has been longer than since 2015?
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good idea. So again, for the listeners, Fiona's got a line on the CV after her last job that says additional roles and achievements in line with promotion are available upon request. What you don't want is that there's a great big gap. So, you know, if you're putting the years and so on that you did your study, and then it looks as though you haven't entered the workforce, and there's a gap of kind of 10 years, it's definitely worth having a line that explains that. I tend to use a rule of thumb that you should probably include, go back as far as 10 years.
Right, okay.
But I appreciate that, you know, the thing with yours is you've got so much that's relevant to the jobs you're going to be applying for now in the last 5 years. So I think that makes perfect sense. You know, if the jobs you did beyond or pre-2014, it's only a few years, if they weren't relevant to the jobs you're going to be applying for now, then I wouldn't bother. You've got plenty to say. So, but that's fine. And yeah, you know, I would definitely make it clear though that you have omitted this stuff and it will be available. Certainly if you're applying for roles with, you know, any kind of audited company, they will need to at some point, usually after job offer, they'll need to see full, you know, history going back 10 years. So, you know, obviously we could continue talking about CVs and so on, but I'd like to just touch briefly on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is such a powerful tool, whether you're looking for a job, whether you're looking for clients. And LinkedIn allows you to bring this a lot more to life. And people will spend a bit longer looking at your profile on LinkedIn. So I think, you know, broadly, LinkedIn should be there to, obviously, it's a place for your profile. It's a place for you to build your network. And then it's a place for you to engage with that network. So particularly if you are looking for a new role or new clients, you want to be seen as an expert. If I'm connected to you, almost every time I log on to LinkedIn, I want to see something new from you, whether that's, you know, an article that you've read, whether that's a piece of content that you yourself have written, or whether it's just another contact of yours that you've seen who's written something and you think it's interesting and you can share it. But the thing that people don't tend to do on LinkedIn is decide what they want to be known for and focus their content purely on that. So it becomes very hard to know what you want to be seen for. It becomes hard for LinkedIn's algorithms to promote you in the right ways. So you're interested in roles in diversity and inclusion, equality and culture. There's so much stuff out there at the moment on that. So, you know, almost I tend to say to people, diarize at least once a week to just go onto LinkedIn, find some content, share it, make comments, etc. And it takes time, but you will gradually start to appear at the top feed of on all of those things. You can ask people to endorse you for certain skills, you know, connect with people. One of the things as well, I don't know where you are on LinkedIn in terms of your network, but when you're starting to look for a job, especially if you've been made redundant or something, you know, where the clock is kind of ticking, go back, look, literally go through your CV and look for people that you know or you used to know at your employers, former employers, and just connect, link in with them. Drop them a note, explain why. People are so happy to help other people. And all you're wanting to do is build your network, because again, the way that LinkedIn's algorithms work is if you post something and one of your connections likes it, all of their connections see it as well. It's just exponential, the growth and the reach that you can have on somewhere like LinkedIn.
I think that I tend to be quite active in so far as sharing articles or sort of commenting on the posts of people who are in my network who obviously are working in D&I. I do that pretty regularly. I think where I tend to fail is that I feel like my profile itself is quite basic. So I've noticed a lot of people have quite a lot of information about whatever their current role is. I was responsible for this, or I'm responsible for this. This is the type of person I am. So it's almost like a mini CV when you look at their profile. And I've realised mine is definitely, it's very basic. It's just my job title and the company that I'm working for. So I had a question around sort of how much then of your CV, I guess, do you put onto your profile? How useful is that for recruiters?
Yeah, it's very useful. So you can, You can export your CV into LinkedIn and it will populate it for you. But equally, recruiters, if they're asked to do a market search, then they can export a basic version of your CV. So if you haven't got that much in there, you know there's a button that you can say that I'm open to work. And in fact, they've now even got a badge that you can use around your photo. So if you're in that category, it means that recruiters are looking for you. And when they're doing a search, you will come up without you even knowing. You see, they can do all of this stuff, present a short list or a long list to a client who will then say, yes, please reach out to Fiona and Joe Bloggs and so on and so forth. So I would put quite a bit.
Okay. So essentially as much of your CV as you can, put it into your profile.
Yes.
Okay. We'll probably do that this afternoon then.
Yeah. It's easy once you've written your CV. Just put that in. And actually you can, with the profile, you can write a little bit more, because often on LinkedIn, that will be all somebody will read. It sounds crazy. I've just told you to put the rest of the stuff in. But that's more because then, as I say, you'll appear in long lists and so on. But your profile, you can make it more personable. So it's more like you talking. I suppose it's the difference between a Facebook post and writing a letter, or a text message and writing a letter. They're going to the same person, but you just use a slightly different language. LinkedIn is definitely a social media channel. Again, think about your personal brand and what you want to be known for, how you want to be seen. Invest the money or just get somebody with a great iPhone camera to take a really nice, good shot of you, where you reflect your personal brand and the kind of roles and the kind of companies you want to work for. The number of people who've got photos from their weddings, sorry if you're listening and you've got a wedding photo up there, or photos where they're clearly in a bar and they've cropped the image. Again, great if you want to go into hospitality, brilliant, but not if you're looking for a corporate job.
Yeah.
And it does make a difference, I'm afraid. I'm conscious that we could go on and on, and we haven't really even talked about building out your network and so on and so forth. But has that been helpful? Is there anything else you'd like to ask?
Super helpful. I think it's just, obviously for me, it's been having to change my mindset about the kinds of qualities that I want to display in my CV, in my cover letters, on my profile. Lots of my roles prior to this have been very commercially focused. And so it's just been to get an understanding of how I should be organizing things, saying things about myself. So it's been good, because at least I feel I'm definitely on the right track, but it's been really helpful to know that there are certain things that just with a little minor tweak could make a big difference to how recruiters and potential employers are sort of seeing me as a professional. So yeah, it's been really helpful.
Brilliant. All right. Well, very best of luck, and I look forward to hearing how you get on.
Thank you so much.
It's a really tricky subject. CVs are very personal and people put a lot of effort into them, or they should do if they're going to be effective. And the world of work is constantly changing, as we talked about just now with Fiona on do we, don't we put our names, how do you identify different genders and so on. But writing a CV is really like dressing a shop window. You want to entice the right customers in, those who have the intention of buying, but just as one window will have something you want, you'll walk past others. But what you say and how you say it on places like LinkedIn and other social channels will keep potential buyers interested. Get it right, and it really does make a difference. I wish Fiona and everybody else who's currently facing uncertainty in the job market all the very best. Don't forget, if you'd like details of the CV writing and LinkedIn program that I'm running, please email me, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. You can also use that to send any feedback you have on the podcast or leave us a review in iTunes. Thank you very much. Until next time.